everybody. Welcome to The Meisterpiece. I am your host, Susie Meister. I'm excited about our guest today. It's Pittsburgh native Carl Kurlander, who abandoned us for the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. He became a screenwriter of St. Elmo's Fire and producer of shows like Saved by the Bell. He's since returned to Pittsburgh, where he founded and is now the president and CEO of Steeltown Entertainment Project, and he also works on the Steeltown Film Factory, which sort of mentors and promotes up-and-coming filmmakers, and he's also a senior lecturer at the University of Pittsburgh. So this guy's got a lot going on, and we're just going to find out all about his projects and how he's bringing films to the Pittsburgh area. Please welcome Carl Kurlander.
I'm happy to be here, Susie. Thanks.
Yeah, you got a lot cooking, so I guess what I want to do is kind of start at the beginning of your story. You are obviously an accomplished writer, and you went out to L.A., and you made it big.
Well, ironically, you know, I knew nothing growing up in Pittsburgh. This all looks in the rearview mirror like I had a plan, but I was very shy growing up here, and I had a miserable childhood where I was picked on kids at public school and got a scholarship to Shadyside Academy, where I got picked on by richer kids. And then I had a crush on a girl who was a waitress at the St. Elmo Hotel, and because I was very shy at the time, instead of confessing my love to her in person, I wrote a short story called St. Elmo's Fire, which she actually responded to the short story and told me what a good writer I was, as opposed to calling the cops. and that got me a scholarship from Duke University to Universal. And so I basically spent, you know, 2 decades out there writing movies and TV shows. And ironically, never intended to come home. I used to come back and I'd go to Shadyside Academy and I'd eat at Minio's Pizza, and that
of
was
course.
It. And but I was raising my 1-year-old daughter by the Sunset Strip, and I took money back to Shasta. They offered me a job, and then Pitt said, well, why don't you come work there? And college was more interesting to do, and also you didn't have to get up as early in the morning. and so basically what happened is I came back here for what I thought would be a 1-year Hollywood sabbatical, because my 1-year-old daughter was dancing naked on the coffee table above the Sunset Strip, and my wife said, if we stay out there, that could be a job.
So, right. Is this the ghost of Christmas future?
Yeah, so yeah. We thought this was, you know, my wife wanted to move to the Valley, which is more family-friendly in L.A.
Yeah.
And we thought this journey was just going to be for 1 year, and we're going to head back to L.A., and it would be a fun little adventure.
Yeah.
But instead, many other things have happened that have kind of changed all of our lives.
Well, that's exciting. I know I loved your film, My Tale of Two Cities, has sort of taken on a life of its own, both in incredible popularity, but also kind of symbolic. I like the way you frame it as you came back to the city of Pittsburgh and both you and the city were having a midlife crisis. Is that really how you felt?
Yeah, well, you know, when I came back, you know, I didn't have any idea. The Pittsburgh I grew up in was very different than the one I came back to.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in a freak thing on Oprah for leaving Hollywood and coming to Pittsburgh on a show about people who changed their life. And just, this was 2003, and just as I said how happy I was living in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, quite literally, because Fred taped the show around the corner from me, that was a really hard year for Pittsburgh. Fred passed away, and the city of Pittsburgh started to go into bankruptcy.
Right.
And, you know, I wrote an article. I became a lightning rod between, as I was teaching at Pitt, everybody who grew up in Pittsburgh started to come and talk to my students from my friend Bernie Goldman, who I knew out in Hollywood, who did 300, to Eric Gold, who manages Jim Carrey, to Jamie Widows, who directs 2.5 Men. And, and I eventually wrote an article saying, realizing that our biggest export isn't steel, it's talent. And that talent makes billions for other cities. Pittsburgh incubates these people, and then they leave.
Wow, that's interesting. And why do you think it is that they leave? Do you feel like there wasn't opportunities for them here?
Well, I can tell you exactly, because in the crazy journey this has been, all their mothers kept showing up at these events, and eventually we had them for lunch, and a mother's lunch at the University of Pittsburgh.
That's brilliant.
And it was funny, because we asked them, why have so many people from Pittsburgh been so successful? And we probably pointed out 5 factors that are really key.
I love it.
First, so here's what they said, we all believe.
Okay.
Which is the first is that Pittsburgh has this great work ethic, and even though people think of glitz and glamour in Hollywood, it's 12 hours a day when you're on a film,
right?
And people know it's either that or the steel mill. So the work ethic, the everyman perspective. You know, Gene Kelly was a dancer from you know, East Liberty,
yeah.
And you know, he had said, "I can dance like a truck driver would dance," because you know, he's not, you know, market testing this. He grew up in, you know, he's Liberty. So,
right.
So the bottom line is, you know, the work ethic, the everyman perspective, the sense that we have all these arts. When Rob Marshall was nominated for an Oscar for Chicago, he said, I grew up in a buffet of the arts here.
Hmm.
Because of the foundation community, we have a great symphony here. We have great museums. We
mm-hmm.
have great places for people to get their training at the universities. The problem is, and that leads us to the other two, which is one is that there you get all this, but you can't make a living here. So it kind of lets people, systematically, we train them, and then when they decide they need to go make a living, they go to New York or L.A.
Yeah.
And
so
do
you think ultimately the butterfly comes back like you?
No. This was insane. And I don't really people have this fantasy. People come back, or people came to Pittsburgh 100 years ago because there were jobs here.
Yes.
They came here because people saw that there was coal and there was iron, and I'm trying to figure out what makes steel. I believe it's those things. And they said, hey, there's resources here.
Yes.
And they could get jobs. Well, you know, so what happened is I accidentally kind of sold up my house to somebody who was related to the Hillman family, and they are the ones who first suggested we start a nonprofit. With Steeltown isn't a company, it's a nonprofit.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
That was really created not just by the foundations here and the wonderful people here and the civic leaders, but a lot of people would come back to Pittsburgh and feel allegiance and see great opportunity here. So the people I mentioned and more said, we want to help. And they said, some people said, well, do you want to do a company? And they said, well, no, why would we compete with ourselves? We make a lot of money.
Right.
We're not going to start a company in Pittsburgh to compete, but we want to particularly mentor young people and help people out. And also, we see a new industry. Hollywood is changing, and Pittsburgh has things like WQED, which is a state-of-the-art facility, and great
mm-hmm.
universities, and great crews here from Fred Rogers and George Romero.
Yeah.
So it's really been a vision that Ellen Weiss-Kander co-founded this with me, and she was a wonderful woman who said that entertainment could be Pittsburgh's new steel. And 10 years ago when we started, people thought, what are you talking about? That sounds crazy.
Right.
And, of course, I just came from the Promised Land screening last night, and, you know, we've had Matt Damon here and Tom Cruise here and Dark Knight here, but more importantly, the people who Tom flew back, Chris Moore, the producer of Promised Land, both of them flew back here after the movie was made to thank Pittsburgh, as Chris did last night, and say, we had such a great experience with Cruise here.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, so...
Well, one of the cool things that your nonprofit does is you're sponsoring the Steeltown Film Factory. It's kind of like a spinoff, if you will, of your organization and that's actually how I got the idea to interview you. I noticed on Facebook a lot of people were buzzing about this prize, this $30,000 prize where people could submit a short film and compete and hopefully win. And I wanted to hear more about this sort of filmmaking competition.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is the deadline is January 13th. People submit 12-page scripts. They don't have to be set in Pittsburgh, but they have to be able to be shot here. And basically, we get all of our Steeltown advisors, which are the people I mentioned and many more. We have over 60 now from L.A., New York, and Pittsburgh. They grade the scripts blindly. And then the top 10 get to pitch their ideas at the University of Pittsburgh to top people. Last year with Eric Golden, who made it, Jim Carrey and Ellen DeGeneres. But various people, the top 10 pitch at Pitt, then they're cut down to 5, and then those people present their storyboards and how they would do their movie at Point Park University,
mm-hmm.
and then the three finalists end up at Carnegie Mellon, where the actors there end up doing a reading of their screenplays. And then the panel of judges decides whether one person gets all 30,000 or whether they split it.
Oh, wow.
And, it's the largest prize pretty much in the country and one of the few competitions where people can go from script to actual movie. And again, people don't have to have any experience. We're looking for great writers and storytellers. You don't have to have made a movie before. Part of this is training, and so we have hundreds of people come to all these panelists that they'll sold out every year. But basically, the idea was to try to teach people here how the industry really works. And then, of course, give people their break that you'd have to usually go to L.A. or New York for.
Right.
You
That's
know,
pretty
so.
Valuable. How long have you guys been doing this competition? Is this the first year?
No, this is actually the fourth year that it's going to be done. It is interesting. Pittsburgh is such a sleepy town in that the idea came in 2003 when we did something called the Steel Town Entertainment Summit, and everyone came back and talked about what they do. Eric Gold, who manages Jim Carrey, was talking about Bruce Almighty and how they made the screenplay and how they spent a lot of money rewriting it. And said, you know, we spent millions on it. We'd much rather spend the less and pay somebody here, but you got to learn how to write a movie. So he's the one who originally came up with the idea in 2003. It took us till we did the Land of the Dead premiere in 2005, which raised the first money for it. And then we've been doing now in the 3 years past, one of our winners last year, Chris Prexa, who does Pittsburgh Dad, his movie's already been optioned by a huge Hollywood production company.
Oh, my gosh.
As a feature. The winner last year, who wrote a script called Perils of Growing Up Flat-Chested, a CMU student who is now an NBC page in L.A.
That's awesome.
And already has interest. So the whole idea is we only have, you know, we had 182 submissions last year, which is a lot for Pittsburgh, but very small for most contests like this.
Yeah.
And we really want people to submit. And frankly, if you were going to be a dentist, you'd go to dental school. You need to learn how this business works. So people dream about it all the time, but they really need to go and watch the process, even if they don't win. Everyone who submits gets to go to these events and see exactly how it really works in Hollywood.
I was interested in, I was looking at the criteria for how you guys judge the short films, and one of them was that the content needed to be Pittsburgh-inspired. How strict are you with that, and how can you tell if there's Pittsburgh inspiration?
We actually let that go from, in the beginning we thought, let's make it very specific to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be anymore. It's something that what we really think and what we always advise people on is to write the unique voice.
Mm.
And so frequently when people tell stories about Pittsburgh, they are unique.
Yeah. Very true.
Steeltown produced a movie called The Shots All Around the World about Jonas Salk. Well, he happened to conquer polio, and now we have a lot of interest. We actually have a national distributor for this movie that will be broadcast this year.
That's awesome.
And the bottom line is Jonas Salk wasn't a local guy, and no one knew that polio. No one knew that Fred Rogers did a show here.
Wow.
So we want people to tell universal, unique stories as opposed to, oh, I want to do the next Batman. Well, you know, Batman's a franchise. You've got to find out what your original thing is. So, so you know, there's so much talent in this town.
Absolutely.
The hard thing is you know, we want to give those starving writers, you know, and or people who work in plays and theater, or people who are students, or people who just have had a great lives and want to tell a story, an opportunity here.
And it sounds like Steeltown Entertainment Project, one of the goals is to connect people and just sort of create a community of people with like-minded ideas and professions and put them in contact. Is that accurate?
Well, we do this. It is a big part of what we do. And people sometimes ask us, like, how do you work with the film office or WQED? And we have a variety of things. We're kind of strategic in terms of, you know, what's good for Pittsburgh and how do we build this industry? So the Film Factory really is probably the best connector for the average person, because even though, you know, Jack Reacher shoots here, the average person isn't going to get to go you know, be on the set.
Right.
But someone can come and listen to Chris Moore, who just produced Promised Land. He's been a panelist several times for us, and hear from him. He started a show called Project Greenlight with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
That really is like the Film Factory, and they were kind of were birthed at around the same time. And Chris, who's not from here, has just become a great advocate for Pittsburgh. So we connect people. You know, we have a variety of programs. We also have something for middle school and high school. It's called Take a Shot at Changing the World, where we give over $10,000 of prizes to middle school and high school students.
That's phenomenal.
And that's been a third year. And Take a Shot, we're on to tie these both together, on January 19th at the Heinz History Center for Martin Luther King Weekend, we are having a free screening of a movie called The People Speak, which has Matt Damon, Morgan Freeman, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Pink, Josh Brolin. I could go on for about an hour.
That's a pretty good lineup.
They're all reading work based on Howard Zinn, the historian, who talked about the people's history of the United States. And part of our theme this year is, you know, how Pittsburgh has changed the world and how young people want to change the world. So, if again, people go to our website, clfm.org, and find out about all these things. But that's a program that serves middle schoolers and high schoolers. We also have a co-venture with WQED that R.K. Mellon has funded that is incubating projects. And we've Jamie Widows, who did 2.5 Men, just shot something last year for us. It was a pilot. We did the next reality star Pittsburgh through that. And that's geared towards really bringing cop professionals to Pittsburgh to work with resources here and get things made.
I feel like you're the ambassador of Pittsburgh.
You know, people don't really understand this. They think, oh, you must love Pittsburgh. You love My Tale Two Cities and everything.
Yeah.
And if you watch My Tale Two Cities,
there's the ambivalence.
And brutal. I have very mixed feelings. The reason it's called My Tale Two Cities is I think this is the greatest city in the world and its own worst enemy. I think this is a city that conquered polio, but then let Jonas Salk leave and set up his institute in San Diego, which created biotech jobs there. I think it's a city that nurtured Andy Warhol and then left. He left, and then when they died, they built a big museum.
Yeah.
We'd like to bet on talent when they're alive, and we really believe in the talent that's coming out of the universities and that comes out of Pittsburgh. Stephen Chbosky, a Perkinsville Wallflower, is a great example of somebody who grew up in Pittsburgh and made a beautiful movie that he waited 13 years to shoot in his hometown. And, you know, we just want to create the atmosphere where talent comes to Pittsburgh, stays in Pittsburgh, and that, you know, we really see this as the new industry. And certainly there will be other industries, but this is one that really can have a catalytic effect on the region, as people see now. You've got Tom Cruise on talk shows talking about how great Pittsburgh is. Emma Watson. I mean, you can't buy
balloons. Right. And it sounds like, we, now that we've sucked you into the vortex of staying in Pittsburgh, at least for the moment, do you feel like you're making an impact?
Yeah, I do. We're very hungry. We have projects that come across our plate, which really we think could change the region. Frequently, Pittsburgh is a little slow to move. And a lot of what happens, sadly, I'll give you a simple example. When we had the summit in 2003, there was a guy named George Amiro who lived around the corner from
me.
I met George and I said, my mother, when I was growing up, was in advertising, was in a George Amiro movie that I've never seen. Because his name is Hungry Wise, and I'm always afraid my mother was taking it or something. So so I hadn't met George since I was a kid. So I said to George, why don't people, you know, make your movies? He goes, oh, Pittsburghers don't believe in Mexican movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Night of the Living Dead, as you know, was one of the most successful movies ever. Of course.
Right.
And get in later to the business aspects of it. But the bottom line is he met my friend Bernie Goldman, and they both wanted to do a new movie called Land of the Dead, and we wanted to film it here. But unfortunately, we didn't have the tax credits at the time, and both Bernie and George wanted to, but it was cheaper to shoot in Canada. And
right.
You can't go to the, you know, it's business, so you can't go to people and say, well, we love Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the sentiment doesn't do it.
Yeah, and so through a lot of people's help, and particularly a guy named John Villaverson from Lionsgate, but a lot of people started to knock on the door and say, you've got to pass film tax credits, which happened in 2007, and Steelton brought John in, and a lot of other people were involved. But,
and that's been huge.
Know, that's been a very important part. But now 48 states have tax credits, so it's not like that alone can do that. But so the whole idea is that Pittsburgh, we think that we really are on the cusp of making this a sustainable industry. That we've gone from a lot of missed opportunities to a point where people are seeing the impact it can have, but to make it truly sustainable, we need to get more people involved who are really the decision makers and people here who are going to say, yes, this is an important industry, as important as other industries. You know, when we did the Jonas Salk story, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, their entire grants for during World War II, 1 year was $1,600 for a study on blood pressure medication. My stepfather's 89, and he was there, so he told me about this.
Wow.
And the foundations put, after World War II, $26 million into medicine because they thought steel won't be here forever.
Yes.
And you may have noticed that medicine is now.
You may have noticed. I have, yes. It's pretty phenomenal.
But people don't realize that UPMC had a 1% brand recognition in the middle of the 1990s. And, you know, we're glad to hear that people are now understanding that Steeltown is playing a role in this, and there are many partners in this. But,
yeah.
But the bottom line is we are really, we think, at the beginning. You know, I do like a lot of things. I'd even say love Pittsburgh sometimes. But the funny thing is I just feel like we have a real opportunity here to change the world using Pittsburgh.
You want to drag us up to our potential.
Well, I have met so many, you know, if you watch my Delta Cities, you know, I didn't mean to do that. My dermatologist offered me money for a movie. I thought, this is so stupid. Make a movie. And then 19 other Pittsburghers put back to us. And
I love it.
As you notice in the movie, we went shopping with Teresa Heinz Carey in the Strip District. We played football with Franco on the north side. I didn't even like the Steelers going up. I like the Vikings. But there's no greater person. Forget being a football player.
Right.
I hear he played some football, this guy named Franco.
Right.
And his wonderful son, Doc.
But yeah, I think I've heard of him.
But they are the greatest people. I mean, Franco, his character and who he is as a person is amazing.
Yeah.
Thomas Starzl, who pioneered the liver transplant, you know, he walks his dogs all the time and in the park, and he is just, these are local people. Paul O'Neill, who, you know, these people aren't local people. Paul O'Neill was the Treasury Secretary. These are people who chose Pittsburgh because they felt like the city is capable of. And you tell me another city that conquered a disease. Pittsburgh conquered polio.
Yeah.
Now you tell me another city that has done some of the things Pittsburgh has done in terms of. But you know, 100 years ago, Carnegie was richer than Bill Gates and Warren Buffett combined. And you had Frick next to him, and then you had Heinz, Westinghouse. It was the richest city in the history of the world.
Right.
And within 100 years, we went bankrupt. So,
well, I think we are pretty good at reinvention, and I think that you're a part of that next phase, and I think that's exciting.
Yeah, and, you know, that's exactly, and I think that's why it's such a great metaphor and why I tell the cities is played in 26 cities. Like, everybody realizes that the particularly America right now needs to reinvent it.
Yeah. Well,
and,
the Meisterpiece has kind of got people that listen from all over, so I want to go away from the Pittsburgh stuff because they're going to get sick of us, you know, loving on Pittsburgh. And I just wanted to know, I'm sure you get harassed all the time about how do I make it in the biz? You know, everyone wants that magical kind of equation. What's the secret? So at least can you offer some advice for folks who maybe are writers or are interested in entertainment? What the heck do they do? Carl,
by the way,
help them.
This is the easiest thing in the world. We always have interns at Steeltown,
right.
But again, my first day when I got that free scholarship to Universal, I had to get gazpacho with no croutons, no sour cream, and chopstick on the side for a guy named Joel Schumacher.
Oh, gosh.
Who was doing DC Cab with Mr. T.
Wow.
And because I started off as an intern, I always knew that, and I got a hamburger, lettuce, tomatoes, and onions on the side for a guy named Bruce Berman, and I'm telling you the story, you'll see in a second why it's relevant. So I accidentally, the onions got on the burger and not on the side, and Bruce said, that's okay, I just won't eat it. And he gave it back to me, and then I went crying, and then he sat me down later and he said, look, in this business, you have to do the little things before you can do the big things.
Whoa.
He said, no one's going to give you $100 million if you're not willing to go get the lunch orders and make them right. And so I'll deal with writing in a second. But
okay.
If you want to be in this business, you know, you need to want it more than anyone and be. Everybody who's come back as a Steeltown advisor who grew up in Pittsburgh, not one of them obviously knew anybody in the film business because they grew up in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And so the bottom line is they all had to learn that it was being able to show up and do the work ethic and do the work, not like pretend like, you know, wear sunglasses and drive a Porsche and act like you're cool.
Yeah, because that's what everyone pictures, the schmoozing.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, the schmoozing happens because people have to be around you for 12 hours, so they better like you. And Pittsburghers are pretty likable.
They are.
And in terms of being a writer, there could be no simpler way of doing it in that if you go to the Steeltown website on the Film Factory site, you'll see all the resources. There's 5 books everyone reads, Sid Field's screenplay. And you should read screenplays. You can read them online now or go to Drew's Cryptorama or anywhere. But you need to read a couple books.
Do your homework.
Story. Do your homework.
That's
and the
very
bottom
professorial
line is,
of you.
if I can quote Chris Praxta, so forgive me because I'm old, but Chris Praxta, who did Pittsburgh Dad, and which is now at 8 million views,
yes,
and who's already sold his script out to Hollywood, said, you got to be an idiot not to submit to the Film Factory. The odds, if you're talented, to be honest with you, out of the 182 scripts, you know, there's a few that quickly rise.
Sure.
But the other thing I want to say is there's a great guy named David Kapp, who I knew early on. He wrote 12 screenplays before any he sold one. And then he's written Mission Impossible, Spider-Man, Jurassic Park. I could go on forever. But, you know, I watched David write the 12 scripts and then have a career.
Mm.
It was almost a curse that St. Elmo's Fire happened based on my first script because, you know, then movies wouldn't get made. I'd get paid a lot, but it wouldn't get made, and it's frustrating. So
that is.
So that's the other thing about Pittsburgh, tenacity and the persistence. And it doesn't matter if you're Pittsburgh or anywhere. People who think it's easy should go to medical school or something easy. The movie business is more, there's 65, well, let me just give you the odds. It's hard to get into medical school. Everyone knows that. But there's 65,000 scripts registered every year in the Writers Guild.
Oh, Lord.
When we went on strike, there are 14,000 writers, meaning there's 14,000 people alive on the planet written a movie or TV show that got made.
Wow.
Of that, there's probably 1,000 working writers at any time.
Wow.
So, but that said, you know, it's a different business now. The internet and the digital age, and these kids are living in a digital age, and you know, media is no longer television and film. It's YouTube. It's, you know, whatever people can think of, Facebook, you know. And so it's a really exciting time. And we think that Pittsburgh could become a leader in the digital age, just like it was in the industrial age.
Do you miss the bright lights and big city glamour?
We've had these Pittsburgh premieres lately, and I take my 13-year-old daughter now, and it's funny because they're, you know, I like that they're tongue-in-cheek because in L.A., people get so upset if you're on the right table or you aren't on the list. And people here quickly don't. Land of the Dead went to Canada, but we had the premiere here in Pittsburgh as a because of Bernie and George, and Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez flew in. Quentin, people know, and Robert, my kids. So they flew in for the premiere on their own dime. And then suddenly Universal, you know, got a VIP room and put everything special.
Sure.
So they started to do a line. Before, nobody cared. Then Quentin came and everyone cared. So the funny thing is they refused to go into the private room because they said, this is Pittsburgh. We want to be out with the people.
Oh, that's nice. So, I like that.
So what I do miss and what my wife misses is L.A., because 100 years ago, Pittsburgh was like the place where people went for opportunity. In L.A., people are much quicker they're afraid to miss the next big thing, so they're much quicker at jumping at opportunity. In Pittsburgh, because we've gone through so many years of difficult times, I think people forget that it took somebody to believe in a young 22-year-old who had an idea for an air brake named George Westinghouse, or who had an idea for the aluminum process, which became Alcoa. Now, these were 22-year-old kids, and right now, if they showed up in Pittsburgh, would they get funding?
Right.
And I think we need to create a situation where young people can have their dreams come true, and you don't have to be young, but that dreamers can get funded here as opposed to having to say, you're talented, and when you die, come back here, and we'll build your museum. You know,
yeah, we'll have a statue for you.
Yeah.
Well, I have three more questions for you.
Sure.
What is your all-time favorite movie?
Well, it's funny. I always say this to my students because I said, if a bus was coming, and so I always say three. so for years, I've always said, you know, Annie Hall, Manhattan, and The Graduate.
Ooh.
And I was teaching, and I showed those three movies, and I showed a fourth movie, Taxi Driver, all in a row to my students each week.
Okay.
And then a girl asked me a question, and she said, why are you showing us the same movie every time?
Mm.
And I said, wait, Annie Hall, The Graduate, and Taxi Driver are the same movie? And she said, yeah, they're all about guys going after girls who are out of their league.
Wow.
So I was like, well, my wife probably knows why I'm showing this. The bottom line is, you know.
That was very perceptive of her.
I know it was. And it really, what I love about my students is they bust me every
time. Yeah, did you feel exposed?
Yes, I felt exactly like, you know, so I love those movies. I also love 400 Blows because I'm a film professor. I should probably say
love
things
that.
Like that.
That's right.
And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I have to say, recently, I guess my favorite movie this year, Percival Wallflower.
Oh.
And I feel I'm happy to say that because if people haven't seen it, you should rush to see
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Best movie of its kind, The Breakfast Club.
That's awesome.
And, I just think that guy is amazing. And there's been a lot, Promised Land was surprisingly really good. I hope people go out and see it. People think it might be an issue movie, but when I'm saying it's good, I don't mean I think people thought, oh, we'll see something on Marcel Shale, and that's not exactly exciting. But the movie, I took my daughter, and she really loved it. So anyway, I love movies.
I asked my Twitter followers and Facebook followers if they had any questions for you. And one person, Shannon, wanted to know if the whispering of bad news at the dinner party scene at Mayor Winningham's parents' house came from real life. She said she loved Rob Lowe whispering prison.
That is so funny. we, as many people do, from what I recall, because I know people have done that at the dinner table, Mayor Winningham character is based on several people who I know. And,
okay.
I went to college with a girl who was not like the character, but whose father had a greeting card franchise. And so I'm still good friends with her, so I should be careful. But I think we borrowed that from Neil Simon. Joel had seen something like that in a Neil Simon play, but also had grown up in Long Island. And Joel and I wrote it together, Joel Schumacher. And
so
that particular moment came from that, although there are many moments in St. Elmo's Fire, which sadly, including trying to freeze yourself to death, which I tried to do in North Carolina, which didn't work out too well for attention. But there's many, many personal things, and a lot related to Pittsburgh. There's several Pittsburgh people who the movie's based on, including Lynn Snyderman, who was the waitress at the St. Elmo's Fire.
I think that one of the reasons why people are so drawn to that movie is because it seems so intimate, don't you think?
Well, it is so funny that people are drawn to it. So my friend Sean Flaherty and many other, whose father was the mayor here growing up, and Sean's a great guy, and people now know his wife Debbie, who is, Debbie Flaherty on the commercials for, so she'll make your deal. So when Sean and Debbie were the first people I know who got married, and when they and other people saw the movie, I remember people thinking, this movie's so unrealistic, and Pittsburgh really gave me a hard time when that came out. And on my fifth high school reunion, Sean told everyone, I was living in a laundry room in an anarchist collective in Hollywood, like with no money, and Sean told everyone I wrote Tootsie, and people were like, hey, man. And then he said, oh, I'm just kidding. And then my 10th high school anniversary, I had actually written St. Elmo's Fire, and I can tell you this because I remember people gave me such a hard time from Pittsburgh. They did not, people, and I don't blame them, Joel Schumacher was a fashion designer, so departments were much more lavish. And, and people who really lived through that time, it was like the fantasy of what your life would be after college. So, but ironically,
nice,
25 years later, the movie is more popular than it was when it first came out.
That's
so,
a good sign, Carl.
Yeah, I noticed. But, but I did think, and I'll be honest, one of the secret reasons I came back here was I did feel a little like Holden Caulfield's older brother in Catch on the Rye. He wrote one good short story and then drove around the Hollywood Hills in a Jaguar.
Oh, wow.
I had a BMW, so that wasn't me. But the truth of the matter is, I had felt that, I wanted to really do work that was meaningful. And although St. Elmo's was very early successful and it was based on people I knew, once I started to get paid a lot of money to write, it changed what I wrote about. And so even though we're doing things like documentaries like My Town, the Cities and the Napoleon movie and helping young people get their dreams come true. I just feel very excited about the work that we're doing now.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people are excited, especially in the Pittsburgh area. My last question is what I ask all of my guests, and it's, what is in the trunk of your car?
Oh my gosh, what a great, brilliant question, and I don't want to prolong this even longer, but I have a habit from L.A. of keeping almost everything in the trunk of my car, because in L.A., when you drive across town, it's like driving from Pittsburgh to Cleveland. Quite literally,
right.
If you're in rush hour, going to the west side can take you 2 hours, 3 hours.
Absolutely.
So in the trunk of my car now. By the way, I think there must be a hole in the trunk because I have alternative wardrobe because I'm a little superstitious, so I have lucky shirts and I
no,
have
you don't.
Overcoat. Yes, I have. Well, people may notice that in my Delta studios, I always wear a blue button-down shirt and khaki pants.
Okay.
And that's because when I went to Hollywood, I lived above a store called Clinton Rider, which is a men's clothing store in Pittsburgh. And Hollywood was so fashionable that my rebellion was
right.
to wear the same outfit all the time.
I love it. You had a uniform.
I even had an office next to John Hughes, and I used to untuck my button-down shirt. And I've always wondered if in 16 Candles, he stole that from, you know, the office. But the bottom line is, so in my trunk is an alternative wardrobe.
Wow.
Home. And not to mention, I have all the propaganda for Take a Shot. We have these polio pens we give out. And I have, my daughter keeps yelling at me that I haven't changed my, I have my same BMW convertible in from Hollywood. And I have not changed the CDs. They're in the trunk of the car. So the Beach Boys still play.
Yes!
For, since I came out here. And
there is no shame in that. They're my all-time favorite.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. Well, it's funny because when you're in Pittsburgh, when I grew up listening to the Beach Boys here, I really understood the, you know, the longing and the beach. It seems so exotic. Then I went to California. I even produced a TV show called Malibu CA, which was the fourth spinoff of Saved by the Bell. It was set on the beach. I never went to the beach. But I moved back to Pittsburgh, and you know, on these cold winter days, you listen to the Beach Boys here.
Yes.
And just so you know how art works with life, Brian Wilson never knew how to surf, and he wrote longingly, even though he lived right next to the ocean. He didn't go in the ocean a lot. And the funny thing is, there's a family called the Moritz family who left Pittsburgh and started something called American International Pictures, which are all the Beach Blanket Bingo movies.
Wow, yeah.
That was a Pittsburgh, that's a Pittsburgh family, and they always, I always thought they must have had that fantasy.
Yes.
Of what it's like to
beach
live in
envy.
California. Yeah. So now the son, by the way, Neil Moritz is one of the most successful. He produced Against Whale and Jump Street, Fast and Furious. But
it's so cool.
Everything has a Pittsburgh connection. So
even
if you're not from Pittsburgh, poor people, you know. But I do want to say, you know, to kind of summarize in what Woody Allen said about show business for those who are interested in this area, you know, he said the number one thing is showing up.
Okay.
And it's so frustrating to me. I'm glad that we do have, you know, sold out events, but so many people say to me, I want to do this and I want to do this, and they don't show up. And so I really want
That's
to encourage everyone to go, you know, if you go to steeltons.org, unlike my old job, this is a nonprofit. We're not here to help ourselves. We're here to try to help the region and to help people. And, you know, you need to learn this business. And the way to do it is through a lot of the resources in Pittsburgh, including our programs. And, that's why they're there, and they've been set up by people who are some of the top in the business. So we just are really excited to, you know, be doing this right now and to have the momentum. And
well,
can't wait till it happens.
I just want to encourage my listeners to visit steeltown.org and steeltownfilmfactory.org to find out more about what Carl has been up to and the opportunities that you can have as a filmmaker, especially if you're in the Pittsburgh area. And what are you, a Twitter guy? Do you want to promote your Twitter handle?
You know something? We are just beginning. I have a young person in the next room who will tell me all about this, but I think, you know, there is a Steeltown Film Factory hashtag and a Steeltown hashtag, but I'm never sure what they are. I'm sure if you search Twitter, you can find them, and we're starting to use those more because, as I knew when I was a 22-year-old in the office, it's the young people who are going to really get this all going, and we're on Facebook also. So, but I can't thank you enough, and it's so great to have someone like you. You know, again, I think like you say, you know, Pittsburgh is a great conduit to the world.
Yes.
Great to have people like you out there, too.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you, and I wish you the best of luck, and we'll definitely check in with you in the future. And check out more of what Carl Carlander has been up to at steeltown.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at Susie_Meister and, of course, SusieMeister.com. And tune in next week for more hilarious and interesting guests on The Meister Piece.